absolutely wild as Fern Gagne's all-star wrestling goes coast to coast and continent to continent. The greatest wrestlers in the world.
He may be an apprentice carpenter, but I guarantee you he is a seasoned ring veteran.
I've been hit with bar stools, bar rags, bar maids.
I'm talking to you!
They're scared that Hulkamania is still running wild.
Oh, yeah.
I got a big fat wife and 9 kids at home, and I gotta feed them.
And take a look at Jesse the Body in real life.
Open your hand once if you would.
You want to see it?
This is absolutely unbelievable. Totally, completely out of control. He's coming in over the top. Hey! Look out!
So many questions I've got that came up during that intro, but I'm going to wait and ask those later to Mick and particularly Joe, because something just crossed my mind because I'm just a little kooky up there. Hey, I am Chris Tubbs. This is the preeminent podcast dedicated to the American Wrestling Association. We like to call it AWA Unleashed. Now I'm going to bring in two guys, Polish Joe and Mick Karch. That open, it got me thinking about something I want to ask you guys off the air. Maybe we'll even include it as part of a membership. I can tell them what to include that later. But what's going on, guys?
Good morning.
Good morning, Chiefs.
I'm kind of all over the place. Acknowledge me as your tribal chief.
You know, and as we are taping this, ladies and gentlemen, we are one day removed from WrestleMania. So everybody's got a kind of WrestleMania fatigue. And Joe Chupik, on the other hand, has daughter's wedding fog. And, you are just, yeah, your eyes are rolling like a slot machine there, buddy.
But mission accomplished. Got a second daughter married off, and well, at least I remember the entire evening. Maybe not so much the ride home, or how I got into bed. But put it this way, I think Crusher would have been proud.
Were you wearing the same clothes the next morning as you did when you went to bed on Saturday night after you got home from the wedding?
Socks, yeah. Everything else I managed to remove, but socks and
you removed them at the wedding, or when you got home.
Well, I mean, have you met my friend Polish Joe? I mean,
I understand. I may have started to do that at the show.
Just kidding.
No, an absolutely fabulous time.
Congratulations, Joe.
Yes, congratulations. Yes,
congratulations.
I missed night one of WrestleMania, but that's what I've heard. But even if it would have been a good first night, I would not have missed my daughter's wedding. So
of course.
Good. Well, we are going to try not to miss here. We've got a fun show, guys. It's going to be about near riots in the AWA, or, you know, riots, near riots, fan behavior. We're going to kind of get into all of that.
Does that include Mick at buffet lines, or we're talking at the arena?
There's no near riot with me at a buffet line. Near is out the window.
I mean, cheesy mashed potatoes that have been underneath that lamp for 7.5 hours. That's Karch's specialty.
It really is. I only go back for maybe 4 or 5 helpings. And the cold, lumpy gravy, it's heaven.
That's your new gimmick, cold, lumpy gravy.
That's correct. Let's put another T-shirt out there.
Cold, lumpy gravy. Hey, if you want to be part of the cold, grumpy, lazy gravy, I don't even know what I'm saying.
Wow.
Here. I'm just going to put the graphic up. I'll let you guys talk about it. Let's talk about memberships, guys.
Memberships, which are on the rise, and we are very grateful and happy for that. And we know that the people that have bought memberships, purchased memberships, are enjoying the perks. And that's what it's all about. And Joe, you can kind of clue everybody in.
Yeah, take a look. It's right there.
We're making the guy that's the most hungover do the work.
Hey, well, I'm a by the time he's done, the membership will be $4,900 a month. You know,
well, record inflation or greedflation. Anyway, you can take a look at it on your screen. What we've got to offer, as you can see on the pinfall level, we have now added that you get 5 photos from
Frodo.
Frodo's.
Oh, yeah,
it's going to be a rough one. I'm telling you.
The Lord of the Rings has spoken.
Oh, I feel like this is going to be a good hour here.
Oh, I feel like I tried to keep up to Andre's record, but failed. But no, we've added 5 photos from Mix Picks. Yes, I said that right. Mix Picks collection to go along with the monthly live chats, a personalized letter from Chris Tubbs. And we got the sticker, the magnet, and of course, you get to see the monthly watch along.
Love those.
Sign up. I love doing them. I think you two do. And
yep.
Yeah.
The response so far has been great. So sign up. Come on, get on board.
Yeah, it has been the response for that has been outstanding. Hey, for the new members, Glenn Anderson, Sandy Smith, Michael Bailey, Jade Palisgard, and Pam Soldoff, I need your mailing address, and also we need your email address, except for you, Sandy. We've got that, so we can get you guys in on the next live chat, live stream that we've got. So either DM me or send it to me at awaunleashedpodcast@gmail.com so we can get you guys all hooked up. Last thing before we do this is we've also got merchandise, guys. We've got new t-shirts. We've got mugs. You know, we've got the stickers. We've got phone cases. We've got, I think we got pillowcases. I think we've got all sorts of cases. If you want it, you want something that's going to represent the brand. And I'll tell you how much the brand means when we get to the shout out later on in the show. Go to tpublic.com/user/unleashplus. And you can get all sorts of AWA Unleashed merchandise. So there you go, guys. I'm excited about that. We've got more people that are repping. But if you want to be a part of it, that's another great way to support us with the memberships and also heading over to TeePublic.
There you go. Well done.
That it?
Well done.
Okay. Let's see if we can capitalize on that 45 seconds of momentum now that we're about 6 minutes in. You're right, man. This is what we get for trying to do it early the day after WrestleMania and Joe's daughter's wedding. So this is maybe not the best planning on our part, but.
Well, what else is new?
Well, yeah.
We'll just call this the fog episode.
There we go.
The fog. Yes, I like it. I like it. Okay, guys. Actually, let's kind of get into wrestling crowds because I feel like the crowds themselves, the whole like intensity of crowds, I feel has changed. There used to be riots, like people used to be a lot more emotionally charged in a negative way, but I don't feel the same sort of like animosity or intensity or hatred for the bad guys, the villains, when I go to shows. It's more kind of a, okay, we're supposed to boo, we'll boo. I don't get any of that vitriolic, we really, really hate this guy. Why? Is it a societal thing? Kind of take me through why you guys feel the whole landscape of wrestling fans, the ones that are attending shows, why that's changed.
First of all, it's the breaking of kayfabe. You know, when wrestling was red hot in the 1950s, when it started on the Dumont Network in Chicago, particularly in the southern United States, and I'm not picking on anybody, but there was a riot at wrestling shows all the time. Fans getting involved, getting into the ring, to say nothing of what happened outside the ring when wrestlers would be stabbed. You know, at a bar or a restaurant or what have you, people believed that is the big key, Chris. They believed in what they were seeing. They believed that the arch villains were exactly the character that they portrayed on TV. There was a lot of cheap heat where you would the villain would come out and attack the particular region of the country that he might be wrestling in. The clientele that attended the matches, it was all an air of believability. So when the business had not been exposed, and you know, and there were always people who knew what wrestling was, but you know, a majority of the crowds back then, when they went to an arena for that 2-3 hours, they suspended that disbelief and they got into it. The difference between wrestling then and now, clearly, of course, is the lack of kayfabe. And as you said, Chris, really well done. Now you're programmed. The wrestling fans, it's like they hold up an applause sign. You're supposed to chant what in this segment. And, you know, you screwed up and you deserve it. And this is awesome and what have you. Wrestling fans don't believe anything they're seeing anymore. They know that it's a television show. They react to it like it's a television show. Except when they get behind the keyboard. And I'm just going to, you know, draw a little bit of an analogy here. Back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, when wrestling was red hot and people believed what they were seeing, the fans would react accordingly at the matches and take out their frustration on the wrestlers or in the arena. Now they do it behind a keyboard. And for me, an old school guy, I would rather have a crowd go nuts and let people poke fun at them. I don't give a shit. You know, oh, you believe in that stuff? You know what? I would much rather be in an era where people believed in what they were seeing and enjoyed it and had a great time, as opposed to keyboard warriors and the programmed sheep that just go on the internet and cut apart everything that they see. So, you know, people believed it back then. Now they just want to criticize it. And that's the difference.
I don't know that I could have said it any better, Mick. The internet certainly introduced a different part of professional wrestling, where combine that with the breaking of kayfabe. It's become, going to a professional wrestling event now is like going to see, and I'm dating myself here, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where the fans are now a part of the event with the signs, mm-hmm. with the chanting, "This is awesome," yeah. and every other chant that you can deliver. Combine that with breaking of kayfabe, everything getting out on the internet, people knowing who these wrestlers are. I mean, back when we were growing up, there were even no rag sheets. I mean, I'm talking going back to the 70s. And so you did not know the talent. You did not know the behind the scenes. You could only speculate. And the speculation was based on this being a real and legitimate sport. Not saying that it's not, because they are indeed fantastic athletes, but hey, predetermined and exaggerated.
Yeah, it goes back to kind of what we hear now, that nobody hates wrestling more than wrestling fans.
Absolutely.
And that's really sad, that if you're a football fan, I feel like wrestling fans are right now are a different level of feeling like they're informed. I don't know if that's the right way to say it.
And I'm not
ripping on fans. I'm not. But you see all of this tribalism now in wrestling, and it does. It feels like I've got to shit on the product, so therefore I'm going to get online. And you're right. Like this, back in the day, you only had one outlet, and that was to go to the matches.
Absolutely right. And it's interesting too, because the focus is not on the in-ring product anymore. The focus, mm-hmm. if you go on the internet, is about who's pushing who backstage, and what did Tony Khan post on his Twitter account, and all the stuff that means absolutely nothing in the scheme of the actual in-ring product. So you said it right on the nose, Chris. Everybody thinks they're an expert. They've got to get it. You know, everybody's a keyboard warrior. Everybody's got the answers. But what happened? What happened to just enjoying? And I'm not necessarily saying believe in, because that train left the station. But enjoy the goddamn in-ring product for what it is.
Well, you talked about the tribalism, Chris. What bothers me is when a fan or a group of fans will be all WWE, AEW sucks, or AEW is great and Impact sucks. Or it's professional wrestling. I don't care if it's the WWE, AEW, TNA, or your local indie show.
Yeah.
If it's good wrestling, if it's a good product in the ring, enjoy it, support it. If you don't like it, don't watch it, but why bash it? These are people that are going into the ring, doing something that they love to do, trying to entertain you. And just leave it at that. I mean, I watch whatever wrestling that I can find. Mm-hmm. If it's good, I'm going to give kudos to it. If it's bad, it's like, well, okay, maybe I won't go and tune into that next time.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to kind of jump off into this. And we set it up a little bit longer because, again, the context of this conversation is going to revolve around the intensity that fans had to release at the show instead of having an outlet via, you know, keyboard, online, social media, whatnot. So let's get into the first one here, guys. Excuse me. There, I want to start at what they call the world's most famous arena. And I'm just going to say Madison Square Garden. And I'm going to let you guys kick it off. Mick and Joe, I'm going to let you guys kind of take it from here.
Madison Square Garden, as you said, Chris, the most famous arena in the world. And again, we're drawing that line. So the new school fan, the modern day wrestling fan, needs to know what it was like back then, you know, and don't laugh at it because people believed in it. The Madison Square Garden show, probably the most infamous riot of all time in professional wrestling, at least the one that got the most notoriety, was in 1957 at Madison Square Garden. The main event was Edouard Carpentier teaming up with Antonino Rocca. He was Italian. He was over like a megastar out on the East Coast in Madison Square Garden. And they were taking on the team of Dr. Jerry Graham and Dick the Bruiser. And Dick was early on in his career, and he was a hated villain at the time. Well, as the headline said, this developed into a full-scale, all-out riot at Madison Square Garden. Antonino Rocca had some blood spilled, and the fans hadn't seen that before. They went absolutely apeshit. And what wound up happening, there were fights in the crowd. There were fights in the ring. Chairs were being tossed around. It was a complete and total nightmare. And that's Antonino Rocca right there. And he was kind of the predecessor to Bruno Sammartino as far as that demographic out in New York and that area. But it got so completely out of hand that legitimately, and there's Eduardo Carpentier, wrestled in the AWA later on in the 1960s and 1970s, great talent. What happened was, you know, they stopped the match, and I don't know if it had gotten completely out of control, if they called it a no contest, whatever. But there were 60 cops were injured. Fans were injured all over the place. There's Dr. Jerry Graham, a great heel back in the day. They wound up suspending. This is the New York State Athletic Commission. And I don't know what the upshot was when they went before the board or the athletic commission to plead their case. All the wrestlers were fined. I don't know if they broke kayfabe at that time for the athletic commission. All the wrestlers were fined. And great shot there from the left. That's Rocca, Carpentier, Bruiser, and Jerry Graham. Dick the Bruiser was suspended for life from wrestling in the state of New York by the New York State Athletic Commission. And I only do that. I know it's not an AWA related situation, but this was the probably the most infamous wrestling riot of all time. And again, I wish I had more details as to what the boys said under, you know, under their testimony or pleading their case or whatever. But it was absolute chaos at the Garden. And Bruiser, yes, he was legitimately not Wally Carbo like. He was legitimately suspended for life in New York.
And this was back at a time when professional wrestling was under the supervision of boxing and or wrestling commissions. Promoters had to go and get a license to run an event because professional wrestling was presented as a sport. So that's why you had, Mick was talking about the commission and being fined. That's just, it wouldn't happen today unless a fan got injured. You know, it might be a lawsuit. But well, in the Twin Cities, we had the Minneapolis Boxing and Wrestling Commission that no longer exists, at least as it pertains to professional wrestling.
And everything is so controlled today, Joe. I mean, most of what you see on television is such a closed off environment.
And it's such a corporate environment nowadays.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, Chris. You are spot on. It has become big business. Not your small town mom and pop wrestling promotion, promotions. And it's night and day. So for the new school fans who are scratching their heads and say, hey, come on, everybody knows. No, back in the day, everybody didn't know. And that, again, what a situation, what a riot. And that's just the first of the ones that we're going to talk about today.
Different time, different era, to say the least.
Yep. Let's go to Chicago for the second one. Let's fast forward about 10, 11 years. Let's go to the late 60s. Let's go to the cats versus dogs, if you will. The big cat and the mad dog.
This is, again, talk about the intensity and the believability of wrestling into the 60s, into the 70s. Chicago, as we have noted here on this program many times, notorious for wild crowds at the Chicago Amphitheater. First of all, the amphitheater was on the south side of Chicago, bad Leroy Brown, and they sold hard liquor at the matches. Well, you take wrestling fans who believe what they're seeing, take hard liquor, put the two of them together, and you can imagine what the end result is. What we're going to talk about is a situation, Ernie Cat Ladd, who was a tremendous pro football player and then broke into professional wrestling, wrestled here in the AWA in the late 1960s. Ernie was a babyface in Chicago. African-American, one of the greatest African-American wrestlers of all time. He was going to be wrestling Mad Dog Vachon, and we've talked about riots and near riots. This is one that was actually stopped before it got started by a phone call from the police department to Bob Luce, the Chicago promoter. There's a picture of Ernie Ladd in his football days. And again, Ernie is a babyface at this time, and he's wrestling Mad Dog Vachon, a heel, on the south side of Chicago in the amphitheater. The promoter, there's the dog. The promoter, Bob Luce, who is one of the legendary carnies in professional wrestling, gets a phone call from the police department. And apparently there was some racial tension and riots going on in and around the city of Chicago when this match took place. The cops basically said to Bob Luce, listen, the African-American or the black professional wrestler is going to win tonight, or else. He basically, or the officers basically laid down the law to Bob Luce because they were anticipating, again, the believability of wrestling. If the dog went over, and I should have the information at hand, I don't. If the dog went over, there was going to be trouble. They sensed the riots. It was a time of political tension, racial tension, and it could have all exploded in Chicago at that time. And later on, of course, things did happen at the amphitheater. But again, the believability, and the cops weren't taking any chances.
Question, Mick, was race any part of the angle going into it?
I don't believe so, Chris. It wouldn't have been with the dog, because you know the dog had his own personality, yeah, and his own character, and I don't remember anything racial coming out of Mad Dog's mouth. It was just that kind of a situation. Ernie Ladd was a hero to the Chicago fans, the African American community, and the cops made damn sure, you know, you're in trouble if the bad guy wins tonight. Bob Luce, as I understand it, kind of kayfabe that he claimed, you know, he had no control over who was going to win or lose or what have you. But that could have been a devastating situation in Chicago.
So did the big cat go over? Do you know that?
I do not know that. I know that they both were alive and well for another 40 years in professional wrestling. So, you know, and there was no riot that night. So all's well that ends well. But it could have been disaster.
Wow. Never heard that one. It's sort of, well, in a small way, reminiscent of the Jimmy Superfly Snuka and Colonel De Beers racial tensions at the Showboat. And of course, that went over to include Derek Dukes. It's not on our list today, but another near riot at the Showboat from, I certainly remember that night.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so let's fast forward about 10 years, and I feel like maybe we're going to have something similar to the same conversation. Kind of take me through what happened with the Texas Outlaws, Sailor Art, and the Big Cat, because it's same city, one of the same participants, and you've got Texas Outlaws, Art Thomas, and Ernie Ladd.
Ernie Ladd and Art Thomas, of course, African-American tag team. Sailor Art Thomas, another AWA veteran, tremendous babyface, physical specimen. They were teaming up Ernie Ladd and Art Thomas in Chicago. And again, proximity matters. The amphitheater, it was a powder keg on its best night. Rhodes and Murdoch, the Texas Outlaws, of course, were incredible heels at the time. And the upshot was, the storyline was that Ernie Ladd, there's Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes, Ernie Ladd, who had been this beloved babyface that we mentioned a little bit earlier on, turned on Sailor Art Thomas and left him laying in the ring. This was Ernie Big Cat Ladd's official heel turn in professional wrestling. So the fans not only are stunned by what they're seeing, and there's Sailor Art, but they were absolutely outraged that Ernie Ladd had left his brother, Sailor Art Thomas, in the ring to be taken to task by these Southern rednecks. And the fans, again, went berserk. They were not happy at all. There's Ernie Ladd in his heel days. A far cry from earlier on in his football days. But again, look at the powder keg. Look at the combustible elements here. You got the Southern tag team. You know, clearly, you know, there's some stereotype there. They're wrestling the African-American tag team combination in Chicago. And one of the tag team, the babyface tag team, turns heel and leaves his partner for dead. Again, Chicago, and the crowd went apeshit.
Can't help but think of what went through Bob Luce's mind when this was coming around a second time. Part of me wants to think that he was happy, because let's face it, and Eric Bischoff has the book titled by it, Controversy Creates Cash. So how many tickets were sold going into this one and the last one that we talked about? How many tickets were sold because of those incidents? I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, knowing wrestling promoters, there's a part of me that's thinking they're like, yeah, let's poke the bear a little bit. Let's poke it, and then we can get more people to buy tickets for our next event.
Wrestling poked the bear for decades, whether they were fighting World War II 40 years after it happened or whatever. That's what was going on. And Bob Lewis, I told you, he was a carny. And Bob Lewis, he would print these programs, then sell them at the matches that always related to cancers in the business, blood, violence, maniac, out of control. He was the master of the oversell, of the overhype. And that certainly added to the situation in Chicago. And he was a pitch man.
He was a living infomercial before there were infomercials.
You are correct.
Interesting. I didn't know he was that much of a carny.
Unreal. Gene Okerlund times 10.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm learning something new here. Let's go a little bit further west, not much, to the city, the area that we're located. But I want to stay in the 70s. I kind of want to go back a few years. I know we're kind of skipping back a little bit chronologically, but we still got Rhodes and Murdoch. And then we've got Nick Bockwinkel and Ray Stevens. Walk me through Minneapolis in 1973, Mick.
Amazing. And again, Rhodes and Murdoch, for the relatively short time that they were a tag team in the AWA, you see a pattern here. They created some very hostile reactions from the fans. There's Dusty and
there Dick they are again.
There they are again. You know, whether it was the Minneapolis Auditorium, Chicago Amphitheater, or the Flame Cafe on 14th and Nicollet, Rhodes and Murdoch were the real deal. Now you've got a situation where you have four heels. Rhodes and Murdoch were not baby faces; they were heels, and they are wrestling Bockwinkel and Stevens at the Minneapolis Auditorium. The way this came about was Nick was part of a six-man tag match, and I believe he walked out on Dusty Rhodes, and you know, Rhodes calls Murdoch and blah, 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 and let's get even with these guys. The crowd decided that Dusty and Dick were their favorites for the night. Interesting, they made their choice, but Nick and Ray were the bigger heel tag team of the two. As the match is progressing and it's a brawl, as you would expect, all of a sudden, it really hit the fan. People are getting into the ring, and off-duty Minneapolis police officer Bob O'Brien, who was part of security, was stabbed. Luckily, if there's such a thing, it was a penknife, nothing life-threatening. But Chuck Swenson, the referee, knocked the guy out, knocked the fan out with a punch. A fan tried to jump on Nick Bockwinkel on the outside of the ring as the chaos was ensuing in this match. Total and complete bedlam and pretty damn near a riot at the Minneapolis Auditorium. And again, you got four heels. Nobody was even a beloved babyface at the time, but it was the electricity and the intensity in the building.
So going on what I had talked about previously, how promoters will have a tendency to feed off of something like that. Was there a return match the following month, or did they just cut it off at that point?
You know, I should know. I know they took the match around the horn. I don't know if it was the same kind of impact as it was in the Twin Cities. But eventually, you remember, Dusty Rhodes eventually turned babyface here. You know, not all that long after that. He teamed with Superstar Graham for a while. But Dusty became a babyface. But that match itself, I remember Joe and Chris, I was sitting there about eight rows back ringside. And I saw the fan jumping on Nick, and I thought, oh, shit. This is not going to be good. All of a sudden, fans are in there, cops are in there, and then you see the officer grab his rib cage, and you knew damn well something had happened. You didn't hear a shot go off, and the referee is punching people. And, you know, Minneapolis was relatively tame compared to some of the other cities, but not this night.
From a production standpoint, so I got my director hat on, I just wonder if there were more video taken, because back in those days, house shows, I mean, they just did live television. But if it would have been recorded, I'm wondering if Vern would have said, let's put this into every market that we're going to be running to show the riot that happened, or if he would have tried to brush it under the rug, as if you will. Just curious. Again, Vern, he wasn't a Bob Luce, but Vern was still a wrestling promoter, and so was Wally. Would they have used that to try to sell tickets for the next show?
That's a great question. And my response, my inclination is no, they wouldn't have, because they didn't need to. The match itself, the intensity of the match and the feud and everything sold tickets. They didn't like the riot situation. You know, it kind of, imagine this, cast a kind of an aspersion on the world of professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. So, and Vern always wanted to, you know, this is the AWA, we wrestle, we're pristine, we're this or that. I don't think he would have used it as a promotional marketing tool. Probably would have cut it off, or at least edited it out. You know, certainly when a police officer is getting stabbed, you don't want that out there.
Sure. Hey, I'm guessing there's some wrestling promoter somewhere that would have done that, though.
Oh, no doubt. Bob Luce, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to go there, but I'm glad that somebody else mentioned it. Speaking of going back, let's fast forward a couple of years from what we were just talking about, but we're going to go back to Chicago. Man, the second city, first in problems, Nick Bockwinkel and Vern Gagne. Kind of take me through this one, guys.
Here is a real serious situation. And again, Chicago, we're not picking on you, but it's in the history books.
You did this to yourself, Chicago.
Absolutely. You know, it's...
Way to generate heat, Chicago.
Chicago. Again, Chris,
Chicago.
Let's mix hard liquor with wrestling fans and, you know, a sweaty building, you know, and what have you, and see what happens. Vern Gagne is wrestling Nick Bockwinkel in the championship match. Nick is disqualified in the main event. That is the finish of the match. And, of course, our good friend Bobby Heenan is at ringside, getting his nose involved in the match in whatever way he possibly could. End of the match, pop, 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 pop. You're hearing shots being fired from the upper catacombs of the amphitheater. And that was a quick shot of Bobby in all his brutality, all his beast mode. again, the fan. Well, we know Bobby Heenan. We know how. And this was a headline in the Chicago paper. I don't know if they caught this guy. I believe they did, but he wounded five people at ringside. He was taking shots at the ring. And I think it may have been Bobby Heenan who alerted Nick and Vern to the fact, we got to get the fuck out of here. I mean, these are not firecrackers going off in the building. I know that a woman, a 37-year-old woman, was seriously injured. She was shot in the chest. I don't recall if she died as a result of that. I know that an 11-year-old boy was hit by a bullet from this guy. And also a deaf mute, 23 years old, who was enjoying the wrestling matches, also was hit by one of these shots. None of the wrestlers, thankfully, was injured. But again, it was crazy. And the next time I saw Nick in Minneapolis, I talked to him about it a little bit. And coincidentally, somebody shot off a firecracker in the main arena at the Minneapolis Auditorium as I was talking to Nick outside in the hall. And Nick turned white as a ghost and ran towards the hallway to see what had been going on. He had PTSD from a couple of weeks before in Chicago. Again, Chicago, but again, the believability, and then Bobby Heenan and hard liquor, and oh my God.
Yeah.
There you go.
Liquor, guns, and professional wrestling.
Oh, what could go wrong, Joe?
Yeah, just let anybody in. And just the insanity of it. But again, a different time, different era, the believability mixed in with the three elements, not just professional wrestling, but professional wrestling with kayfabe still alive. That's just that it presented to be a very horrible mix on many occasions back in the day. Thankfully, we're not seeing that as much in today's world or today's wrestling. Obviously, the guns are still out
guns
there.
Guns are still an issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and just to digress a little bit, I alluded to it a little bit earlier. This is in the arena. Wrestlers are getting stabbed, getting into fights, getting shot outside the arena. Roddy Piper is attacked. Ole Anderson is attacked. Harley Race, of course, here in the Twin Cities area, gets attacked. So if people, even if they saw these guys out in public, the believability was there. Yeah. You son of a bitch, I'm going to get you. You know, you got nobody around you now. There's no cops. I'm going to get you.
There was no difference between the person they were in front of the crowd and the person they were perceived to be outside.
That is absolutely it. You got it.
So is it better that kayfabe was broke for the safety of the wrestlers? Mm-hmm. I mean, if from a wrestling purist standpoint, that suspension of disbelief because it was presented to you as such. Now you've got a certain part of the people who take it a little bit too far, or at least they did back in the day. I'll ask, is it better? Maybe that kayfabe was broke for the safety of the talent, because we don't have these riots in this day and age.
I think for the talent, it is, because people know that these are individuals that are, you know, playing a part, not unlike any other sort of entertainer, whether you're talking about somebody in a sitcom or a movie. But in terms of the entertainment and being presented as real, I feel like you can't have it both. You got to have either one or the other. But I guess the problem I have when we're talking about, you know, the breaking of kayfabe, and I know I'm getting into a little sidebar here and we can circle back quickly to finish up the last two, so we don't treat any other form of entertainment this way. We don't look at, you know, somebody who's in a movie like a Paul Rudd or a Matt Damon. We don't think Matt Bourne is really Jason Bourne, or Matt Damon is really, yeah, Jason Bourne. We're not believing that Steve Carell is really this idiot boss in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Like, why is it wrestling is the only one that they can critique the character without having any sort of background on it?
Well, great point, Chris. And I think with the breaking of kayfabe, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier on, people now know that, you know, Triple H is Paul Levesque. They know that so-and-so really isn't from Russia. They know, you know, whether it's on Wikipedia or the internet or the dirt sheets, they know who everybody is. They know that the Usos are all family and that they're going to be posing for pictures together on the internet, and then they're going to be wrestling each other next week. The whole thing has changed. And again, it's the controlled environment, what you see on television with all the security. And every once in a while, there's lapses. You know, we saw the guy attack Seth Rollins on the entrance ramp. We saw the guy go after Eddie Guerrero in the ring, you know, in a ladder match. The guy attacks Bret Hart. But these are singular incidents that are, you know, kind of few and far between. And again, you know, as far as is it better, Joe, breaking kayfabe? For an old school guy like me, that's a tough question. It was going to come out eventually in this day and age. Once the train left the station, it was out there. It went too far, I think, in the breaking of kayfabe. Chris, you said very eloquently, you know, you can't have it both ways. Maybe not, but maybe in moderation. Maybe we don't need to know everything. And that used to make the wrestlers bristle. When I would talk to Nick or Ray Stevens, they would say, yeah, the people who think they know, they don't know everything. You know, all these experts think they've got all the answers.
No, still applies today. It still applies today. The astonishing part of stupidity is the sheer confidence that comes with it.
Oh, good boy. Oh, you that nailed it.
I mean, that's the nicest way to put it.
Yeah, you know, that's a whole other show. Is it better kayfabe or, yeah, you know, is it better out in the open? For the guys, from a protection standpoint, certainly they're much better off than they were back in the day. But having said that, blah, 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 maybe another show.
Yeah, just don't, to have everything exposed is not good. Right. I want to be surprised. I don't know what, yeah, I don't want to know what the finish is going to be. I don't want to know that John Cena and The Undertaker are going to come in during the main event. Let me think it. Let me anticipate.
Yes. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. I purposely avoid spoilers because I want to be taken back. I want to enjoy the performance and what they're doing in front of the camera. And, you know, I want to be enjoyed by their work. I want them to do their job. And I figure for them to do their job is for me to sit there as a fan and do my job as a fan.
There you go. And Chris and Joe, when I was, you know, growing up watching this business, I didn't know if a guy was coming into a territory until all of a sudden he's there on television. Oh, my God, we heard of this guy. What's he doing here? Whether it was Billy Robinson or what have you. Now, you know, 6 months in advance when a guy's contract is going to be coming up, yeah, where he's headed, who's negotiating with him, too much, way too much. And it takes away from the enjoyment.
It does. Well, I mean, last night on social media and even this morning, with WrestleMania last night, people are already commenting, why didn't they have MJF?
Oh,
why didn't they have, it's like, why? Because he shouldn't have been on there last night. He's not, yeah, he might be signed, but give this to the guys that have worked to get up to that point. Again, knowing too much or thinking that you know too much, to me, spoils the surprise. Okay.
Chris, when you said the nobody hates wrestling more than wrestling fans, how many other scripted episodic television shows do people go so completely freaking ballistic online the day after a show and, you know, airs and, oh, this should have happened, that should have happened, I don't understand this, oh, they're going to die and I hope nobody watches. Wrestling fans, take it easy. For God's sakes, take a breath.
Yeah, enjoy it. Enjoy what's in the ring. Enjoy the talent that is being presented to you. Whether it's a local indie show, AEW, TNAW, settle the fuck down.
Yep. Well, another place that people did not, quote unquote, settle the fuck down was Super Sunday. Uh-huh. And that in and of itself, this seems to be an axis, a turning point in a lot of people's minds. It might not have had anything to do with the end result of the AWA, but this is certainly something that people have debated and will continue to debate. Super Sunday, Hogan, Bockwinkle, and the title reign that wasn't.
The reason that this match is part of this show is that was as close as the AWA in St. Paul had been to fans rioting in many, many years. And really, I mean, there were fights going on. There was shit being thrown at the ring. People are chanting BS. They were hot. And it's amazing that that was in the modern era of wrestling, too, that they would respond that this way. But that's how over Hogan was as a babyface and how hated Nick and Bobby Heenan were as heels. But again, Chris, you said it, you know, when the decision is reversed and Hulk Hogan is deprived of that AWA championship, they're still talking about it 40 years later, for God's sakes, you know, still analyzing it. Would it have made a difference in the AWA, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't care. I don't think so. What I do know is back in the day, for its time, that believability factor was still there. It was still a couple of years out from being totally exposed by WWF and Vince McMahon as sports entertainment or what have you. So when Hogan doesn't go over, when Stanley Blackburn reverses the decision, the crowd went absolutely nuts and they were pissed and they let the AWA know it.
It was pretty wild. I was at Super Sunday and I never got close to being one of those fans to throw something or so forth. But yeah, everybody was pissed. Everybody thought Hogan was going to get the belt. We all wanted Hogan to get the belt. Near Riot, yeah, I think you're onto something there, Mick. I couldn't help but think that night, thinking back, 41 years ago, how Stanley Blackburn was going to get back to the locker room because from the fans' perspective, it was because of Stanley Blackburn that Hulk Hogan did not get the belt because he's the one that reversed the decision. So Stanley was, oh God, probably mid-late 70s, didn't really move around too well. But he did get back and no shootings, no stabbings, just a lot of empty and half full beer cups thrown at him.
Poor Stanley Blackburn. You know, this SOB, this figurehead president of the AWA is probably sitting on his porch in Amarillo, you know, counting his money. I think he was an attorney or a landholder or something. And he's probably farting his beer or whatever. And he gets a call from Vern, and Vern says, come on up here, Stanley. We're going to have Hogan and Bockwinkel. And then when Stanley comes into the locker room, Vern says, by the way, Stanley, you're going to reverse the decision in front of 19,000 rabid Hogan fans. And poor Stanley doesn't know what the fuck town he's in, let alone that this is going to happen. The fall guy.
And yes, Stanley Blackburn is a real human being. Yes, he did exist. And no, he was not a true official of the AWA.
No.
All right. I got questions about Stanley Blackburn, but I will save those for a later time. And the last one here, guys, to wrap up, we got a few minutes on it. In Hammond, Indiana, the last one that we're going to have, Kurt Hennig, actually, no, Larry Hennig and Baron versus the Road Warriors.
No, you were right the first time. It was Kurt and Baron. Larry Hennig was there doing commentary, and he got involved in the match.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was reading through my notes quick because I was trying to time it.
Of all places, Hammond, Indiana, for an AWA riot. And this aired on television, and I'm surprised they didn't edit this out. Joe Laurinaitis, the late Road Warrior Animal, talks about it on some shoot interviews. It's the Road Warriors against Baron and Kurt Hennig. And the Road Warriors hadn't made that full transition yet into the babyface pop, the Road Warrior pop that they got. So they were still pretty nasty heels. And there's Mike Hegstrand, Joe Laurinaitis, the Road Warriors. So they're wrestling Kurt and Baron on television in Hammond, Indiana. And Larry the Axe Hennig is doing color commentary at ringside. And the finish is, you know, they're beating the shit out of Baron, and then Kurt gets his neck caught in the top and second rope, and now Road Warrior Animal is taking, or Hawk is taking a chair to Kurt Hennig as Kurt is hanging there in the ropes. Well, Hammond, Indiana went apeshit. They went totally ballistic, and there's a disqualification, what have you. Larry Hennig comes into the ring, clears the ring of the Road Warriors. And as they're going back to the locker room area, and this is according to Animal, and I didn't remember this part of it. Apparently some biker chick took a slap at Animal. Pretty good slap, as a matter of fact. And Animal, kind of defensively, boom, he doesn't know who's hitting him, sends a backhand. Well, that did it. Now the crowd is erupting. They are throwing chairs at the Road Warriors as they're getting back to the locker room. As Animal describes it, these big, tough, overweight farm boys are taking off their shirts, you know, with their pot bellies hanging out, their farmer tan, and they want to fight Animal and Hawk on the way back to the locker room. So, yes, this was a full-scale, although a relatively small crowd, legitimate riot that aired on AWA TV. And if you notice, there's one point, I believe it's Hawk, gets hit over the head with the chair, tossed by a fan, and I think it was Animal. And Joe, you know, if you've got the footage someplace, I don't know if you do, levels this prick with a forearm shot that was like somebody chopping down a tree. So again, that was probably the last hurrah for the AWA in terms of intensity and fan violence.
So that was, of all of the near riots that we've talked about, this one, I was actually in the production truck for it in Hammond, Indiana. We were like, holy shit, this is getting out of hand. We were concerned that something worse was going to happen. Well, we talked about what has happened in other territories and other towns before, shootings and stabbings, and not saying anything bad about Hammond, Indiana, but we're in Hammond, Indiana. And so, but we were genuinely concerned, especially when it started to get out of hand. Thankfully, it didn't go too far. But as far as airing what happened on All-Star Wrestling, to the best of my recollections, we did air it the first week after it happened, or not during the taping, because we were down there for All-Star Wrestling taping, and we did three weeks of TV at every taping. But we did air it as it played the first time. And then, Vern, it's like, okay, for replays and especially for ESPN Championship Wrestling, we replayed it for the whole angle aspect of it, but I was directed to cut it at a certain point. And that was basically with Kurt hanging, you know, twisted in the top rope, Larry trying to pull him out, and Hawk hitting him with the chair. And that was, we needed a cut out of it before then, because contrary to what I asked earlier about, does a promoter want to capitalize on it? Vern decided not to in that instance, at least the riot part, the angle part, of course.
Right. Yeah, was the Kurt thing, was that a spot or was that an accident when he got his neck cut?
It was a spot.
It was, okay.
Yeah, it was a spot, you know, they, a lot of guys will do that. They'll
grab, yeah, because I didn't see it. And again, when I was looking at my notes with Kurt and then Larry, and yeah, I haven't seen it. So do you have footage, Joe, or is that footage that belongs to other people?
I think it's on the internet, isn't it,
Joe? I'm sure it is. And I believe it's in one of the AWA pay-per-views that I produced. So
okay,
that'd be a part of a future watch along.
Okay, there you go. If you want to become a member. Yeah, for that, that's good, because I would like to see that, because I would like to see the context in which we're having the conversation. Yeah, because I don't remember that, but I would be very curious to kind of see everything and how that all transpired. And you would think fans at that point, maybe they thought that the breaking of kayfabe, you know, at that point in time, maybe people would have gotten a little bit more, well, is this real? Is it fake?
This was before that. This was before that, Chris. Mm-hmm. This would have been 86, I believe.
Okay. I was thinking kayfabe, it was a little bit later than that.
Yeah. Kayfabe was still good until, I believe it was, what, 90, 91, somewhere in there, Mick?
Yeah. And too, Chris, spot shows, the small towns, people tended to have a, you know, needless to say.
Spot show, but still, this is a TV taping for All-Star Wrestling.
Yep, there you go.
Yep. All right, guys, let's wrap it up here. If you want to become a member, we do have our membership tiers available, and Joe was talking about the actual watch along that you can get. We do those normally towards the later part of the month. You can see right there. Go ahead and take them through it, guys. Why don't you go with it, Mick, and then I'll let Joe follow up on it.
You've got the Body Slam for $2.99 a month, but we kind of encourage people spend that extra couple of bucks for the pinfall. You know, the access to the podcast a day early. A lot of people anticipate getting the podcast Where is it? How come? You got a chance to see it a day before everybody else does. You got your monthly live chats. You never know where those conversations are going to go. You get the personalized thank you letter from Chris. I know that they're selling for a couple grand already on eBay. And of course, I will send you a postage collect on delivery. Five pictures of AWA stars. It's a great, great deal. It's less than a freaking McDonald's Big Mac. Come on, folks. $4.99 a month, or if you're not quite there, $2.99 a month.
And a lot healthier than a McDonald's Big Mac, I have to add.
Sometimes.
Well, true. You know, until we start getting into our battles of love, of course. But no, yes. Please sign up. Help support the podcast. And with that, Chris, let's roll into the shout-outs.
All right, let's do. Also, if you want some swag, go to tpublic.com with Unleash Plus. All right, let's go to the shout-outs here, guys. Mick, you up first.
Kyle Eggleston is as loyal a fan and a former wrestler. In the Wisconsin area. God, he supports us, loves what we do. We love you back, Kyle. So shout out to you, my friend.
My shout out, I had to do it. It's the WWE and WrestleMania last night. And we're talking before the show, Mick, Chris, and I. And I'd made the comment about how watching that main event last night, Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, brought me back to old school wrestling. It was not high spot after high spot after high spot. The acrobatics, and I'm not dissing what the talent can do. Please know that. But last night's main event brought me back to my childhood, brought me back to the early 1980s, where there were holds, there were moves, guys were selling for a good duration of time to try to make me believe. They told an extended story without going to an extreme. There was no tables. There was no ladders. It felt so good to watch what I remembered as professional wrestling. And so to the WWE, to Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, thank you for that, and welcome to the new era of the WWE post. I'm not even going to say his name.
I think they're making a conscious decision and trying to publicly get away from that. I'm going to give the shout out to one of our guys, Jason Biagi, who was at WrestleMania. And look at that, repping at the link.
Yes, sir.
Jason, look at you, brother. Look at you. Yes, that is outside Lincoln Financial Field, night one, Saturday. Jason repping the AWA Unleashed podcast with 72,000 of his closest friends. So I think that I actually saw the wise man, Paul Heyman, I think he pointed up at Jason and he acknowledged the shirt because he realizes how important the AWA was in him being a Hall of Famer.
We haven't been put over that much since you wore a shirt at one of the television shows.
Oh, that's right. I did that at Dynamite and Rampage and Elevation and Dark Elevation Plus and whatever nice. Running on Windows 95 and the MySpace YouTube channel stuff that AEW is doing. I mean, yeah.
Now, rumor has it that he caused a near riot wearing that shirt last night because 72,000 plus other fans wanted to beat him up so that they could get that shirt. Well, hey, there's an easier way to do it. Go to TeePublic and order your t-shirt. Now, how is that for a horseshit way to sell something, Mick?
Love it.